Up next, we will be talking with a psychic detective. Elena Prophet joins us. Her latest work is called It's May and the Lilacs Are Blooming. 1 foot on earth, 1 foot in heaven. And she's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Elena Prophet with us, a spiritual counselor, medium and psychic, life coach, law enforcement consultant, using her intuitive abilities to help people from all walks of life. She is frequently sought out for her accuracy as a clairvoyant, clairaudient, and clairsentient medium, spiritual grief and loss counselor for families of violent loss. She assists in restoring balance and peace. And here she is on Coast to Coast with an interesting title to your book, Elena. Well, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Nice to talk to you and everything. I've been waiting to hear your voice in person.
Well, here I am. Likewise. So where do you live? What part of the country?
I'm in Reno, Nevada.
Ah, okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. I've been here since about, well, I moved to Texas for a while to finish writing the book so that I didn't get distracted by clients and, you know, that type of thing. And so now I'm back and the book is out and life is moving very swiftly with all these moons that we've been having and all that crazy stuff, too.
It's moving way too fast. I mean, you talk about speed of dates. I mean, next week we're into February already.
I know.
We just started this year.
The grid is open. The gates, you know, the whole frequency has shifted really, really powerful.
Let us go back to the time you were a little girl where I assume you still had these abilities, did you not?
Yes, I did. Prophet is my last name, and it would take me till, quite a few many years when I was an adult to find out that the firstborn daughters on the Prophet, my grandmother's side of the family, were all clairvoyant or had healing abilities and empathic. And it was very uncomfortable for me because when I was a child, because nobody told me what I had, and I was extremely empathic, and I could feel people, and I didn't know what was wrong. Why was that woman looking normal, but she was crying inside? You know, those types of things. And I could see people on the other side. And I thought everyone could do that, but I knew that I had to keep my mouth shut about it for some reason. And I'm glad I did, I guess, you know, until I got older. And finally, what happened with me, all of these abilities just kept increasing. As I got older, usually with children, they kind of diffuse, they dissipate. But with me, I'd go through a series of years where I was more perceptive and receptive. The empathic part is always something that's very hard to, you know, control. You learn to close down and to only open to that as much as you can when you need it.
Well, that is so true. Was your gift a blessing or a curse for a while?
Oh, wow. When you said that, my auntie, because she was a firstborn daughter, and I'm the firstborn, and she told me, she said, now this is a gift and it's a curse.
Uh-huh. I thought so.
And what happened, nobody told me about this until I started doing television. And I was getting known in this field, just not the law enforcement part, but, you know, just regular readings and that type of thing. And she got very upset with me. She was in Portland. She got very upset with me, and she said, you don't do this in person. This is, what are you doing? This is something we've always done privately. This is in the closet. People will try to hurt you. You need to not do that. Well, when she found out that, you know, and I found out, well, the stories were she was going to tell me, I just, you know, I didn't have that problem right then. And so then she got into it. She thought it was wonderful because I was the first one out of the closet, and people seemed to love me and want and are kind to me, and I helped people. And so it was a whole dynamic in the family also. So I had to teach her also that we could come out of the closet. And it was a struggle, though, you know.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Now, you had a near-death experience.
Yes,
when did that happen and what happened?
Well, that was in 1985. And what happened to me was I was in the process of getting a divorce. And there was a little argument that went on, and my soon-to-be ex-husband, this is in the book, threw me down on the ground, and the corner of a concrete step went into my left side, and it knocked me out for a little bit.
Did it puncture you?
Yes, and what it did, George, was the velocity of it blew my spleen into the tail of my pancreas.
Oh, gosh.
And so what, a long story short with this, it's all in the book. They can find it out on Amazon. But I started hemorrhaging inside. And so I was in the process of moving to Reno, Nevada, because I started doing radio, KOH, you know, the radio show back in the old day with Lou Gutenberger.
Yeah.
And so we had fun, and I started immediately. Spirit always brings me what I need and shows me very quickly, George, where I'm to be and what, and everything will be provided. All of a sudden, I had a huge clientele. I had wonderful people that were, you know, around me, supportive of me. And then very shortly after that, I became involved with law enforcement by two people that had been longtime friends of mine. And I actually worked the second murder case in Reno, Nevada.
Those things. Go ahead. Huh? Go ahead.
All this time, I was dying. I didn't know it. They couldn't find, I'd gone to the emergency room.
You must have felt awful.
Oh, I did. I did. But see, I can get out of my body. That's part of how I have the gifts, strong abilities I have to deal with these critical incidents and all of this heavy stuff is I, for some reason, I'm able to get out of my body and function. There was a time I was even driving myself to the emergency room.
Jeez. Now, I mean, at what point did you realize that you may not come back?
Well, what happened with that, I started losing weight and I started having violent pain. And I kept kind of sloughing it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go into my meditative state, but I started getting very, very thin. And so I've learned something about when you're dying, a lot of things, and that's what the book is about also, because you get to the point where pain and trauma and emotional concern, and then I was alone, I didn't have family there, I started not being real clear. So I kept saying, oh, it's just a bruise. It's just a bruise. And I had come up right in the process of finding my own apartment and everything. A detective asked me, set up for me to lecture up at the university in the, criminal justice classes about the principles of investigation. And so I did a class on a speaking on, you know, how to use psychics as forensic tools, etc. But I was so sick. I was like, I don't know how I did it. And the detective said, and they're all in the book, and he said, are you okay? Do you want to go to the hospital? I said, no, I think I'm okay. I think I'm okay. So long story short, in a nutshell, it gets redundant because through the pages, I kept going to the emergency room. They wouldn't find anything. And this is where the angel...
And you're getting worse and worse and worse, I take it.
Oh, I was getting worse. I have a picture of me on my website of me on the front after I had had my near-death experience, and I was very, very thin. I started to have helpers, clients that started to kind of protect me and start to look after me, and my hospital visits became...
Now, clients being human or being entities?
Oh, no, these were human clients.
Okay.
But also, in the book, I talk about that I believe that angels come in disguises. They come as
neighbors. Yeah, I believe that too.
Oh, it's so true. And I've had many, many appearances of St. Michael and Raphael. And I got to the point, because as I was dying and getting weaker and weaker and nobody could find it, they started putting me on the drugs. I had a doctor that was not taking care of business with me. And so I knew I had to be very clear. I had to not let him anesthetize me, you know, to the point where I would die. And I would go back and forth to the emergency room. And I got to the point where I was hospitalized quite a few times there in Reno. And finally, my father flew me up to Portland to see his specialist that he had. And while I was there, I saw this doctor, and I saw a shimmer of gold in his eyes. When I see Raphael or one of the archangels for healing or protecting me, that person's eyes for me will sparkle. They'll just sparkle for a minute. And that's what happened up there. And he told me that he saw the tests that I finally had, and he said that it didn't always have a happy outcome. And so we went from there, and I decided to go back to Reno, and there's a story in there about how I found the doctor, Lindsay Smith, who was the only doctor, George, in the country that was working on the pancreas, because nobody wanted to, because you die.
What do you mean?
Well,
what do you mean he was the only doctor working on it?
My doctor was the only one back in those days that was known as a crack shot doctor, that surgeon that did amazing things and was written up about how he could operate on the pancreas.
Ah, okay.
God, yeah. I mean, this thing is just, I mean, it's backstories. It would take us months to go through this without hopping around too much, but I found him. He was sent to me.
Well, once you went over to the other side and came back, did you have certain gifts and abilities?
The abilities that I had were amplified to the point that I was so, I had prophecy. The prophecy would turn in, because during this, you got to know that I was also started working homicides.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in the next half hour, by the way, because that's huge.
So, but what happened with me was, as I got more into this, you know, and got more weaker, I could see things and predict things that happened almost immediately that were life-saving events.
But you could not do that before that?
Not like that.
Wow.
Not like that. I always have been able, if I see death around someone, clients, there's a way, you know, I did a lot of shows on psychic fraud also. You know, you don't tell a client, somebody, oh, you're going to die, you know, like gypsy style, and I'll burn candles for you and all that good stuff. But I had that ability, but it's how spirit would come through me to say, well, let's go to the doctor or whatever. You know, things were handled, channeled in a different way. So things... It was so overwhelming, the backstories to the backstories to the backstories.
Well, you heard the story about the psychic told somebody, and they charged them a lot of money, that you know, you're going to die in a week.
Oh, yeah.
And the person was all upset. And the psychic said, and you owe me $1,000. And
Yes.
the person said, I won't have it for at least a month. And the psychic said, oh, I see that you're going to live at least another month.
Yes. Yes. That's what they do.
Did you bust a lot of them?
Oh, I did. Oh, yes.
Harry Houdini would do that with mediums.
Yeah. Well, the problem with it is that, yes, there are people who are gifted and they come from the right place with it, but they're not a carnival act. You know, they're not doing it for the bucks, because the more you do it for the money, the more the gift dissipates. So then you're kind of not really doing it the way that you used to really do it. And someone who does do it is able to see that you're not really at the top of your game. So that is a whole another world in itself, is what happens with that. A lot of people, when they're ill or frail, many psychics could be real ones. They can be more fragile, more delicate. And I believe a lot of that, too, is because I know when I'm downloading from that grid, you know, I mean, my body is just, the power that comes through me is amazing, and my body heats up. And I've worked with hospice people in the hospital, helping them cross over, and the nurse standing there in the door saying, my God, it's like a furnace in here. What's going on? And that was coming from me.
When did you realize that you had the gift to help solve crimes?
Well, that's I had come back from Mexico. That's another show in itself. I moved back into Sacramento, and I picked up the phone one day, long story short, and I called one of my friends who was a retired police officer, and checked in, say, hey, I'm back, and how's Rod, and this and that, and I was waiting for him to drop that dreaded question on me, because he always knew that since I was in my 20s, you know, I was always wanting to read the guy's, you know, tarot cards.
Sure.
And all that, and he says to me, so what are you going to do now? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, what are you going to do for work? And I was just about died, literally. And I had hummed and hawed, and he said, what is it? And I said, well, I'm going to be a psychic. I'm working on that level now as my career. And I was waiting for him to criticize me and this and that. And all of a sudden he said to me, this was spirit speaking through him, well, why don't you do something worthwhile with it then?
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, what do you mean by that, Victor? And he said, well, why don't you help the cops?
All right, when we come back, tell us how you got involved in that, if you made the call, if they called you, and then we'll talk about the book. It's May and the Lilacs Are Blooming, One Foot on Earth, One Foot in Heaven. Tell us how you got that title of that book, too, Elena, when we come back in just a moment. Her website, she's got a couple of them, and Facebook, all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. But when we come back, we'll get into some of the things she discovered doing police work as a psychic detective. Fascinating stories. In the final hour, of course, we'll open up the phone lines where you can share your stories or ask a question. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Elena Prophet, as we talk about her work. It's May and the Lilacs Are Blooming. Before we get into your police work, how did you get that title, Elena?
Well, when I was 7 years old, my grandmother was putting those lilacs, if you saw the cover of my book, in a crystal vase. There were lilacs on the cover.
And your grandmother had an influence on you, didn't she?
Yes, both of them did, actually. It was firstborn, you know, that thing.
Spoiled little girl.
Yeah, well, I had to work hard. And I've never been lazy, but I was blessed, let's put it that way. I wanted to be spoiled. But what happened with the book was, the reason the cover is that is, she was putting these lilacs in a crystal vase on the table, and we lived out on a country road outside of Portland. And as she was doing that, I was smelling them, because I used to go sit out there by them and talk to them and, you know, all that stuff when you're young. And I said, Grandma, when I go to heaven, I want to have it be in the month of May because I want lilacs at my funeral. And my grandmother kept saying, oh, that's nice, dear, as she kept putting those beautiful lilacs in that vase. And it was actually very similar to that crystal vase on my book that Donna Osborne Clark, she made a beautiful cover for me. And so I happened at 21, let's skip forward a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Came back from living in Paris, and my friend Fran, I used to babysit for her. She said, let's go see this Russian, this gypsy woman up at the Russian tea room. And she's a palm reader. And so we, long story short, we went up there and had tea, and she was going to read our palms. Well, when people try to read me, even back then, I was unknowing about it, but they see whatever is around me, and it gets them. They go, wow, that's a lot there. And she grabbed my hand. She was a beautiful woman, and she had those dark eyes, and she grabbed my hand, and she starts to read it. And all of a sudden, she looks at me and pulls my hand towards her a little bit. This is for real, George. This wasn't how the gypsies that try to play. This was, and I could feel it immediately. I was linking with her. And I said, what did you see? She said, oh, nothing. No, no. You know, she didn't want to tell me. And I said, well, what else? She goes, oh, you've got this, and you've got the mark of being a seer, and this is what you are as a healer, and your heart line. And she was going in there all on and on. And then all of a sudden, I said to her, no, I want you to tell me what you saw. What did you feel right then? And she goes, well, I don't like to say that. And I said, no, you're going to tell me. And she said, well, see this line? This is a line where you could die early in your life. It's broken. It's cut. And so immediately I think, you know, at that age, you think, what, a car accident? Because, you know, your husband might drive his new car too fast.
You never know.
And she said, well, no, no. And I said, well, what is it? Because we had a baby then, and I didn't want my son, what would happen to him? And so she finally says to me, okay, I will tell you what I see. And then she went into level, and she was looking at it, and she said, I said, what am I going to die from? How is that going to happen? I want to know. And I was very grounded when I said it. And she said, something to do with loss of blood. And then she looked at me for a minute. Her eyes, you know, were glazed kind of from being in level. And she said, I see lots of blood, lots of blood. And I said, well, when is that? She said, it could be around 40, 39, that time frame for you. Well, that was the gypsy in the tea room, who was the second prophecy and prediction that I would die, and it was in the month of May.
Jeez. And that's the book. It's May.
And it, May 26th, I died when the doctor opened me up. I had hemorrhaged. My whole body cavity was filled with blood clots. And
as you saw.
Yeah. Yes, and the place I lived, I came home one day and climbed upstairs. I was on the second floor, but as I came around there, I saw a lilac bush that was under my window. But see, I was so out of it, I didn't see it. And I thought, oh, the lilacs. Now, you see how spirit shows you, even though you may not be conscious of the signs that we are given daily.
Now let's get into that work for the police departments. How did that happen?
I might take a couple of these rounds with you, between you and me, to get the whole thing. But in a long story short, if they look on my heartdrops.net, I don't know if you saw it, down the page, I have some photos in a gallery, and those are some of my law enforcement pictures. And I wrote in a thing in the book, and it's so true. Lots of little girls read Nancy Drew mystery books, and they wanted to become her. Little did I know just how that would happen in my life and who I would become. And that kind of says it all, because when I looked back at my life, I babysat, one of the people I babysat for in high school was an FBI agent, and I used to go over and visit them when he would be back, and him and his wife would go out. But on weekends, I'd go visit them, and sometimes he'd give me these crime books, and he'd say, "When you look at this picture, what do you see?"
These were actual cases?
Oh, yeah. Well, these crime magazine things they had. And for some reason, it never bothers me. That's why I work with these, really, I work on a different level because I'm in with these investigators.
So what did you see when he showed you a picture?
Well, I saw that it was not a natural death, and that, I started to describe things. I started to see things kind of flashes in front of me. And all of a sudden he looked at me and, kind of poker faced, and he said, "What about this one?" And he kept, showing me things. I have a very strange thing happen to me. And the cops will always say this. I have physiological things when I reenact a crime. If someone's been strangled, my throat will literally feel,
like you've been strangled.
Yeah, mushy. And if it's been a stabbing, there's lots of blood, I smack my lips. I go like that. And when I'm in level, now this is when my eyes kind of look like that picture on my website, and the guys would already, detectives will say, "Now if she smacks her lips, that means there's lots of blood." But how I got into this was that one detective said, "Well, Rod Englert, he's crazy. He was a homicide detective in Multnomah County Sheriff's. He works with people like you, and he's worked with the top people at times. So why don't you help Rod?" Well, long story short, I said, "Well, I might call him," but I didn't want to call him. Well, Vic called him, and in 15 minutes, Rod's on the phone saying, "Hi, Elena. I hear that you're a psychic, and would you like to come and do some work with me?" And I thought, oh, my God. And I kept fighting him and balking at it. And then all of a sudden he said to me, "Elena, I can teach you. I will teach you how to do this." Because I said, "Rod, I do not want to be telling people, you guys, something wrong and wasting precious time." See, I already knew intuitively, not to do that. And he said, "I will teach you how to use your abilities." And then he added the punch to it, and he said, "Listen, I've got young girls' bodies dumped on the sides of the road all over here, and I have to catch this SOB."
He was convinced it was one person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to get him, and we have to get him fast. And the brokenness in his voice is what I hear in a lot of the investigators I work with, because they want to protect people. They want to protect us. And so the next thing I know, I'm on a plane. There's a chapter in the book, and it's called The Psychic and the Detective. And that is the story of exactly how I became a psychic detective.
And did you catch this person?
You know what? I don't know if they caught it. A lot of times I am not into that. All I do know, in fact, I will try to find out, okay, because he's back now, and I have to call him anyway and ask him for my book review. I will remind him about
Yeah,
that.
I'd like to know if they caught the person. Was it a serial killer?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, sometimes these guys are truck drivers and all that. You know, they don't always do it. But what happened with this, when I reenacted this...
By the way, to our great truck drivers who are listening to you right now...
No, we love our truck drivers.
Okay, good.
I have a female truck driver that she's listening tonight, too. No, but what I'm saying, traffic people, you
mm-hmm.
know. It
sure.
could be anybody. We love them. But what happened was, when I came out of it, I saw him over at a table across the room from me. And he all of a sudden looked up and he slid the stool over with papers in his hands. And he put his knees up to mine and he said, "Do you realize what you just did?" And I said, "No, I was out of it." I said, "I don't know." And he said, "You allowed me to use your mind as a forensic investigative tool, Elena." And I said, "Well, did I do okay?" And he said, "Boy, oh boy, did you." He said, "Do you mind if I show you a picture of a dead person?" And I said, "No, it's okay." So he pulls out this picture, and it was the girl that he had handed me a picture, just a regular one at the beginning.
Right.
And I touched it with psychometry, and he said, "What do you pick up?" And I didn't know. I was trying to learn how to do it. And all of a sudden he said to me, "Tell me something, Elena." And I went, "What, Rod, what?" He said, "What's her name?" And I said, "Her name's Carol, and it's spelled with an E."
Now, did he know that, or he did not at the time?
I didn't know that.
No, did he know that?
He knew that.
He knew that, okay.
He knew it. And then he said, "Boy, oh boy, did you?" Because evidently I reenacted the crime.
And you got the name right.
And I got the name right, and he showed me this picture of this girl, young, beautiful young girl, on the table. And her head had been shaved, and she had wounds exactly by the temple where I was holding my head evidently, and I was flinching and holding my hands up like fighting someone off of me. And on her body, he said I had touched the exact same places. So these were the way that he taught me to know if it was, I call it a red light or a green light. So I know my body will tell me certain things if I'm on or off.
Yeah, no, you've got to find out if they caught this low life.
Yes, but the next day what happened was he said, "I want you to come and speak to some police officers." Now, George, I'm just learning. This is the first time.
Oh, sure. And what did he want you to tell them? I mean, obviously you can't teach them yet.
Well, he had it all worked out. He, you know, they sent out the bulletin to the agencies, and I walked in there, and there were 100 people from all the various agencies. And he said, "I just want you to tell people about how you feel, what goes on with you, and, you know, when you do readings and about being empathic and seeing things and feeling things." And then I did not know this until about a year ago when I got a mail from one of the guys that had set the conference up. And he said, "By the way," he said, "you know, the chief had us play that little trick on you." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, when you were up there on the podium and we handed you 3 envelopes, and we said, and you couldn't open him, and you had to touch him, and you had to say,
mm-hmm.
is this person alive or is this person dead?"
I lied to you?
No. Is this person dead or alive? And he said, "And you blew us away because you held him up and you went, how did I say it? Living, alive, alive, and dead." And he said the whole room just looked at each other. And I said, well, I kind of remember doing that, but I didn't know that that was a trick. They were trying to trick me.
Well, how were they trying to trick you?
Well, they were trying to see if I really could do it.
Stump you is a better word.
Yeah, well, exactly. And the thing is, you know, you go through that because there's so many people in this field that call. I've never, ever called a police department or an agency, ever. They've always called me. And that's the difference, another difference. And I go into that in the book about how people work. We have people that you call police and then they talk about it. And there's, you'll see people on the web that have pages of I'm a psychic detective.
All right. Well, stay with us, Elena. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and we'll take phone calls with you next.